universe.
My name, of course, is Warren Johnson.
Well, super nerdy pet peeve of mine, nitpicky. I don't think he should have been hopping over the top rope like a parkour champion.
You got me mad now.
What is your name?
As always, with my main man, Pots and Pans, Nick Ficone.
That's me.
It doesn't matter what your name is.
You got a
back, I don't really know us like you think that you do.
I'm Ryan Isley.
What is he doing?
My God! Is he the third man?
He's the third man!
What the hell is going on here?
Straight Shooters is, the number one show on Wildfire Radio.
I'm feeling good.
No sleep, no food, no nothing. Just maniacism.
Well, the skeptics and all the people have a little bit of... Let me do this again.
Oh, it's live, Hal.
Sorry.
What actually happened on the show? Nothing.
Give me a hell yeah! I said give me a hell yeah!
What's up, ladies and gentlemen out there in internet land? My name is Warren Johnson, and joined as always by my main man, Pots and Pans, Nick Ficone, Philly voice and Philly influencer. And you're listening to episode 227 of The Straight Shooters on all the platforms where podcasts can be found, including SoundCloud and Spotify and iHeartRadio and the like, where you can subscribe to us and rate and review us on there as well. Show us love, all the love, five-star love if you can, please. We appreciate any feedback, obviously, but five stars are preferred. But yeah, episode 227, like the TV show back in the day. I don't know if you remember that show.
Oh, you want to go ahead with that? Yeah, I remember watching that on I don't know if it was syndication or if it was on one of the networks, but I remember watching it.
Yeah,
I watched that.
Me as a 227 guy.
Why not? I watched that.
I don't know.
I believe it was Amen back to back.
Yeah.
And it was all so I watched that. Yeah.
One of the best intros of all time. Yeah. Sherman Hemsley.
My favorite part is when he went through the jump rope. It was awesome.
Right. One of the best intros of all time.
Absolutely.
He did it probably all in one take, too. He didn't even. Boom, knock it out.
Oh, I'm sure he did.
Yeah, episode 227 of The Straight Shooters and all the platforms.
You didn't think we were going to start that? You didn't think we were going to start that way, did you?
I mean,
spend this whole episode reminiscing about those shows.
I was going to throw in a 227 reference just because, for the culture, obviously, but I didn't expect you to be like, yeah, that's my show too. I'm like, what? I kind of have to be back for a second. But
it had to be syndication because 227 ended in 1990, and I believe I was watching it in the 91 or 92. So
I was only a year old in 1990, so I don't remember what happened in 1990. So, but we got another great show for you ahead here on episode 227. As I said earlier, we're going to talk about a lot of things. Chief among them, for me at least, is Cody Rhodes, or just Cody, I guess. And after he put together another stellar performance. I mean, a stellar, I don't say that lightly, but he's been knocking it out of the park in AEW since AEW started last year in 2019. We just like trying to examine just like where he is at this point of his career, and then I guess where his place is overall in the business of pro wrestling, as well as other miscellaneous things. Of course, the ratings and the war, which, look, I declared over last week. Obviously, there's still going to be more episodes of TV after that. But I meant over from a competitive standpoint, from it you having to worry about whether AEW or NXT is going to win on a week-to-week basis. We know what the result's going to be. It's just a matter of by how much and what's the gap. You know, it's just the same thing, I guess. Or whether the shows increase in viewers and decrease in viewers. So I guess we'll touch on that as well. Before we touch on that, Nick, I did my weekly check-in with you. How you doing tonight, my good brother?
I have had those cheesy grits from Wawa three times this week, and it's Thursday, so I'm doing great. They are excellent, and they are delicious, Vaughn. Have you had them yet?
I honestly did not know that Wawa had cheesy grits, and I wouldn't think to get cheesy grits from Wawa, or any grits from any kind from Wawa. I know they got everything else.
Telling you, man.
Grits. Now, hold up.
I'm telling you.
Now, let's examine this for a second. Because you know when we was going to Wildfire Radio, we used to go to Wawa all the time.
We did.
And they were like an unofficial sponsor, essentially, of the show.
Yeah.
And so, look, big fan of the store, obviously. But the grits, maybe I'm just particular about grits. I don't know.
I'm not a habitual eater of grits. I am not. So
I love
them.
I love them. So I'm particular about how grits are. Like, if you got to do them a certain way for me to like them. So
no,
you said you like them, though. You approve of them.
I do. Now, I had grits growing up here and there, and I never was a fan of how my parents would make them. They always seemed too watery for me. Mm. So when I started getting older enough to like kind of make my own, I would put milk in there instead of water or something like that. I cooked it differently, and I enjoyed it more than, you know, my parents had made it for me when I was younger. But then I just, you know, like I don't eat them that much. If I go to Cracker Barrel for breakfast or something like that, I'll definitely get one of those cups that they usually serve with entree. But other than that, I really don't have them. So when I stopped at Wawa for, by the way, an excellent, excellent new cream smoothie, the salted caramel mocha. Oh, my goodness.
That, yeah, all the intel amazing on Wawa now.
Well, here's the thing. All the advertising they do doesn't really affect me that much. But I went in there to grab a newspaper for my pops, because he still reads the paper. God bless him. And I was like, you know what? Let me get a smoothie. I haven't had one in a while. Whenever I go to Wawa, if I go to get money or whatever, go to get a newspaper, I'm generally in and out. But when I went in there, it was after work. I was hungry. I was like, you know what? I'll just get my food here for tonight. So I went and I saw this new things on their screen and everything like that. So I was like, all right, I'll try this. I'll try that. And man, I made the best decision, because I went back twice this week after that day to get not only the grits, but also the salted caramel mocha cream smoothie. It has chocolate whipped cream on it with chocolate chips. And then just the smoothie was awesome. But man, it's fantastic, Vaughn. Yes, the grits and the smoothie and everything that
That's
I got.
That's a meal. Grits and a smoothie.
Well, today I went and got the macaroni and cheese bowl with cheesesteak, you know, and that was my meal with the smoothie. My meal tonight. And then I saved the grits for later. So I had it for about an hour ago, you know. But before we went on the air, I consumed it. I heated it up in the microwave and consumed it, and it was fantastic.
Look, now that you said this, I'm gonna go to Wawa, check out some grits. All right. I'm gonna check it out.
Yeah.
I'm gonna report back my findings.
Excellent.
And give you a full review.
Can't wait.
Probably on a future episode of the Straight Shooters. So be on the lookout for that.
Hopefully next week.
We'll see. I might forget. It could easily happen.
I'll have to text you every day. Hey. Go to Wawa.
Well, I had grits, obviously, a couple times. I went to New Orleans a couple weeks ago now. Because, you know, shrimp and grits. Southern delicacy, obviously. Or just a delicacy in general. And I didn't love the shrimp and grits I had until the day I was leaving. I was in the New Orleans airport and went to Emeril Lagasse's restaurant. You know Emeril Lagasse? Do you remember him?
No.
I did not remember Emeril Lagasse. He had the show with the live band. He was cooking food. He'd go, bam! He'd throw the seasoning in there. You don't remember that?
Yeah, I don't like watch cooking shows. He's
kicking it up another notch all the time.
I'm not a fan of
it. We should have a Patreon exclusive about Emeril Lagasse's show, because it was incredible. We should watch it together. I'm telling you right now.
How long is it? An hour?
It's like an hour. It's like in the 90s. His show, he's like a late night talk show, but with cooking involved.
Okay, I'm not a...
Like, yeah. That
stuff never intrigued me.
Oh, it's great. But he has a whole bunch of restaurants, and his shrimp and grits is great. So, shout out to Emeril. Kicking it up, still kicking it up another notch in 2020.
Hey, how about you sponsor us?
Yeah, Emeril. I'm your fan. I'm still one of your biggest fans. What's up? Holla at me. But speaking of big fans, I'm a big fan of Cody Rhodes right now. As I said earlier, he had another stellar performance on Dynamite this past Wednesday night. It's now Thursday as we record this. Yeah, he's been on fire. He had the emotional promo after the match. The match itself was fun. Just told a story. That's what a cage match, in my opinion, should be. It could have been better, obviously. I mean, there was still it was still TV. It wasn't a pay-per-view. It wasn't a title on the line. But there was emotion involved. Cody's back in his hometown of Atlanta in a cage where, you know, his dad was in the cage. And Arn Anderson, who's now his head coach, trapped his dad inside the cage and broke his leg many, many years ago. But he did the dive off the top of the cage, which was just crazy. But he, it got me to thinking after I watched it and the whole thing in its totality, I was just like, man, is there any one person that's benefited? Sure, everybody's benefited in their own way. But is there any one person that's benefited from AEW since it started than Cody? From a standpoint, obviously he's got power there, so he can put himself in position to benefit, but he's done it in a way where no one's going like, ah, you know, he's booking himself to be the guy when he's not even the champion right now. Chris Jericho's the champion, and he's not challenging for the title. He did challenge, but he lost. But that's Moxley right now. But from a, I guess you could say a artistic standpoint, I think Cody had people's respect. I think people accepted Cody as a top guy in like Ring of Honor. But I think the jury was still out on Cody as far as whether he could be a top guy in a promotion like an AEW, what it is now. Top of the line promotion where he is pretty much the face of the promotion and no one bats an eye. Because, you know, I don't think if you put him in that position in WWE, I mean, WWE would have messed it up somehow, and I'm sure they would have. And they did when he was there, but, like, there would have been some initial questions. It's like, is Cody ready for this? Is he capable? Blah, blah, blah. I think that there were some questions still that need to be answered about that, even heading into AEW's beginning, so to speak. But he's answered all those questions. Pretty much the first show, like, Double or Nothing, when he went against his brother, Dustin Rhodes. To me, that was the best match on that show, and he's had a bunch of those types of matches since then. You would have thought that, if I would have predicted a year ago this time, who would benefit the most from being on TNT 2 hours every Wednesday night, who would benefit the most from getting that exposure, I don't think Cody would have been my first guy, because I would have said he had that exposure on Raw and SmackDown, and yeah, it was WWE, so it's different promotion, but it didn't really do much. I would have said Kenny Omega would have benefited the most from having that exposure because it's the first time a lot of people are seeing him. He's got this. He's great in the ring, and he's unique. And he's, you know, but once you see him in the ring, it's like, all right, this is the guy I got to watch a lot. But that's not what's happened. Maybe that'll happen eventually. Maybe they're getting to that point right now. It's Cody's time, but maybe at some point it'll be Kenny Omega's time. And I don't know if people will react the same to him as they're doing with Cody, where not only are his matches technically, I mean, let me walk that back. Not only are his stories good, but his matches are good. I think that was always a question with Cody, especially when he was in New Japan. Can he keep up? Is he actually good? Is he good enough to be with Okada and all these other guys? But he's wrestles a different style than those guys. Those guys are all action-oriented. They can tell stories, you know, in their way, but Cody, he strikes those emotional chords. And yeah, a lot of times it has something to do with his dad. A lot of times, you know, obviously Dusty Rhodes. But even without the Dusty Rhodes factor, he knows how to hit certain notes that strikes an emotional chord. And it's propelled him to me as like the face of AEW without even being a champion. He's had, to my opinion, obviously Chris Jericho's done some great stuff. Moxley's done some great stuff, but from a creative standpoint, from an emotional standpoint, Cody's done the best stuff by far in AEW.
Yeah,
and I think it's worth noting that he's greatly benefited. And sure, he can put himself in that position because he's got sway. He can help. At least he's got say in putting himself in that position. But it's worked. Like, you can't argue with when it's like really good. And AEW's ratings are doing pretty well. They saw an increase in viewers this past week, despite the fact that there was a Democratic debate. Yeah. NXT saw an increase in viewers also, by the way, which is good for both brands. Good news for both of them. But Cody, he's knocking it out of the park, man. And I can't wait to see Cody versus MJF. Cody doesn't have to win, but I know that match is going to be special. I know that match is going to have emotion. It's going to have heat. That's the thing Cody knows how to do. He knows how to get, like, generate emotion and heat. Mm-hmm. And he's got it with this angle, and he had it with his brother. He had it with Jericho. When he was going against Jericho, he had that promo when he was talking about winning the title and stuff like that. And people were like, oh, this is one of the best promos I've ever seen. He just knows how to get that heat. And it's worked out for AEW in spades so far.
Yeah, and I like how you said it. Cody's probably been doing the best stuff on AEW right now, because to me, when you look at pro wrestling, I think the best stuff is always the stuff that tugs at your heartstrings, that gets you emotionally involved in the match. And that's why I loved NXT for the longest time, because it seemed like it was the only brand that really brought in emotional, you know, the emotional impacts, especially with the Gargano Ciampa feud, when Ciampa was a heel and Gargano was a face. And it's kind of funny how now they're doing the same thing, just flopping it. But that's neither here nor there. That was like the NXT feud that got me emotionally involved. They got the crowd emotionally involved. And there's really like, there's only so much string that you can go with when you're a Jericho and your big thing is having yourself and your group, the Inner Circle, attack Moxley every week. I mean, that's pro wrestling, but it's not nearly as emotional as a lot of the things that Cody has brought forth since Double or Nothing. The fight that was a lot of blood, the post-match promo, which, you know, it was funny because I thought it was maybe a little too early. Maybe they wait on that. Maybe they bide time for a pay-per-view here and there. But it was like, okay, you just fought your brother, so, like, and now you're just going to be like, hey, I love you, like, we should team up. Like, that was weird to me, and I wasn't, like, fully on with that. But, you know, it was emotional. Like, everyone was involved. Like, he was tearing up. Dustin was tearing up. Like, that, even though the timing was weird, the emotions still got everyone. So, that's what it is with me. If you get me emotionally involved, if you have the announcers saying, like, this is Cody's last chance, or something like that, like, where you can, and you see his facial expressions, you know, when he was getting those lashes, you know, like, I thought it was going to be a stupid segment. I was like, wow, like, this is kind of dumb. I wonder where they're going to go with it. And I don't think they could have possibly done it any better the way it was. So, and by, you know, the middle of the segment, I was involved. I was emotionally involved. I was like, this is good television. This is a good wrestling angle right now. So Cody seems to have a knack for that at this point. Hopefully he continues with this creative direction when it comes to his character and, like, whatever he's involved in. Would I like to see more of that play out in other stories? Sure. But then you run the risk of it being too, like, every single feud being too emotional. Like, you also don't need that in pro wrestling, especially when you have 2 hours every week on TNT. You don't need every single thing to capture the emotions of your viewers. That one thing right now is Cody. Whatever he's involved in, you get the crowd reaction, you get his reaction. He, like, if he's doing a fiery promo, you can almost bet that he's going to start, you know, tearing up a little bit and while he gets through it. So he's definitely, that's the difference between him. And I think maybe some people compare him to Triple H when he had his run as champion. And then everyone thought, oh, he's throwing his creative weight around. Like, he's not losing. He's the champion all the time. And people were just kind of tired of it, but that was a different era in wrestling too. So I kind of respect Triple H for that heel run that he had, maybe in 2004 or 2005, but not so much before that. But Cody right now, that's why I think he's different. Like, I think he doesn't, like, he's not in the title picture. That's different. They could always write a story about how he needs to somehow, if he returns to the title picture. So, I mean, it's wrestling. It can happen. It probably will happen at some point, but who knows? Maybe it will never happen. Maybe Cody will never be the world champion in AEW, but I feel like that would be a hell of a story to tell. And maybe, like, he's already, obviously they're already thinking down the road about, you know, what they'll do and with that storyline, should that come to pass. But man, that that moonsault off the cage, you know, obviously memories of Kurt Angle doing that on Raw, and, you know, Cody bleeding and all that, and the Arn Anderson bit with MJF, and MJF saying, you know, you want to like slam the door on Cody and stuff like that. It was just good. It was good stuff. Arn throwing MJF in the crowd, just like, it didn't take away from Cody or Wardlow for that matter. So I think they booked it as perfectly as they possibly could have without taking the heat off Cody or Wardlow. It was probably the best main event Dynamite's had since they debuted. And I got to agree with you, Vaughn. If we go back to when you said you think the war is over in terms of competitiveness and like how, you know, it's not going to be trading back and forth rating wins at this point. And I remember I went at you last week, but I was watching that last night, and my God, like, it felt so different. Like, both the AEW, that main event just felt so different than what we see on NXT. And I think I'm not fully agree that saying that it's over in terms of, like, I still think NXT probably has a ratings win in their back pocket at some point. But, you know, in terms of like the stories they're telling, and it's not just Cody, but now we're focusing on Cody, and that's the biggest emotion that you get out of watching AEW right now. Whatever Cody's involved in gets you involved and as a viewer. And NXT just does not have that. So, like, I'm, you know, with AEW, I maybe it is over. Maybe it's over because they can do that stuff every week. And NXT, like, they can't really, they don't have anything that emotional. Like, you got to see where they're going with Gargano and Ciampa, but they already did that. And that was like the last big emotional thing in WWE, really. You know, that was your big emotional angle, emotional storyline. But now, like, if they're just going to flip flop and do that again, what do they have? Like, they can't compete against what Cody's doing right now. So definitely agree. Cody's probably at his biggest point in wrestling. So, you know, kudos to him, because it's not easy, you know, trying to get the people involved like that emotionally in wrestling when especially AEW viewers, they basically know everything that goes on anyway, at least what they're told online.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I mean, there are always, I think there might still be questions going forward about Cody by some people. There's always going to be somebody asking questions about somebody. But even like in Ring of Honor, when he was Ring of Honor champion and he was pretty much a top guy, even in New Japan, he was pretty much a top guy. But I always think there's still questions out about whether he could, whether he actually belonged in that upper tier.
And I was probably one of them.
Right. But I don't know how you could deny him at this point. Like I said, creatively, he's done his best stuff. He's been involved with the best stuff. I forgot about the 10 lashes. That was like only a week ago, and I completely forgot about it. But again, just the super emotional. I mean, there was a guy in the front row last night crying. You know, look, I know people say, oh, it's still real to me, damn it. Like that guy, it's still real to me. But like, and that guy did look kind of silly. I'm not going to lie. But like,
I mean, there are silly people out there.
Can't knock him, but like also like praise when Miss Elizabeth and Macho Man got engaged,
or even
there were people crying in the front row at WrestleMania.
Yeah, dude, I just watched that this past weekend. I was like, I'm gonna watch that, and I did. And like, I'm sitting there getting involved in it. I'm like tearing up. I'm not crying, but I'm like, man, this is like the story. And I'm not even thinking about what happens with them in real life. Like, I put that in the back of my mind and try to like leave it. Yeah. Because of what I'm seeing on the TV, and I want to believe that's happening, you know, and that's one of my first wrestling memories, you know, those first few years of my wrestling fandom, like that is what I saw. And I didn't know who Elizabeth was, because when I first watched WWF, that was SummerSlam 90. And then I mentioned WrestleMania 6. I watched after that. So by the time I watched, you know, SummerSlam, my like first real pay-per-view, I didn't know who Elizabeth was because she was out of the picture at the time. So when WrestleMania 7 happened, I was like, who the hell's Elizabeth? So knowing, you know, obviously the history now and going back, and now it's 30 years later, man, like what an amazing story, with especially the people in the front row crying. And, you know, back then I just wasn't emotionally involved in anything of that sort. But now it's like, man, this is like, it's all about the story, man. It's all about the story.
Yeah. And Cody's telling it to a T right now. Yes. That's why I think it's the best stuff.
Another thing, proven me wrong. Cause I remember when he left WWE, I was like, okay, like go prove that you're better than what they gave you. And man, he has. Tenfold.
It's another, and I guess it's just more proof to WWE, man. Y'all had Cody Rhodes sitting there. He's capable of this. Yeah. And y'all was like, let's make him Stardust. What? They had a good story, like with him and Dust and Goldust at that point. They could have feuded together, or like they could have been a tag team, or they could have gone against each other. Either way, they wanted a WrestleMania match.
The whole authority angle when they were like that was like the best part of that run. Right. And then they completely like blew it with them.
But even still, when they turned them, they could have turned them against each other, and they did eventually. Yeah. And they had a match at Fastlane, something like that, which was terrible. No one remembers. They wanted to do something at WrestleMania, and it's just like, why can't you create a space for them at WrestleMania? This is Dusty Rhodes' kids. This is emotions. These are emotions. This is why we're here. You get these people emotionally invested. This is, I think, Dusty was still alive at that point in WrestleMania 31. I think he was still alive at that point. But Dusty's kids, like, you get these people emotionally invested. How many times, even from that point forward, like, how many times have we seen real emotions invested in a WrestleMania match in the last 10 years? I was like, Daniel Bryan, Kofi Kingston. Yeah. And that's pretty much it. Like, how many other matches were you emotionally invested when you were really like, wow, this is, like, taking me on an emotional roller coaster here? No, but they just, for whatever reason, it just didn't want to do that. I don't know. I don't get why. It's just, it's weird.
I mean, and
you squandered that opportunity, but your squandered opportunity is AEW's game, because they got the Cody Dustin match that we all should have got at WrestleMania. We got it at Double or Nothing. It was really good. And we get, now Cody gets to pretty much have free reign on his creative, and it's been really, really good. And you could have had this WWE, but even if you had Cody, you wouldn't have allowed him to do this type of stuff and really pull those heartstrings. And that goes across the board for WWE. They don't really tap into a lot of emotions a lot of times. They just,
and they tout storytelling all the time. You see these specials on like the network, they always tout their storytelling. And like, you had the perfect story right there, and you decided not to go with it. And I don't know if it was out of spite or what, but like, they definitely left money on the table, because that could have been an all-timer right there. And even if he didn't do it at WrestleMania, but it could have been an all-timer storyline.
And they had the, and I think they had the footage at the lineage, because they got all the footage.
Yeah, yeah.
They could have told it just exquisitely, and they just, nope. It's terrible. It's terrible stuff. Another thing I wanted to applaud last night was just the match itself. I thought the way it was structured, at least the ending, the finish, perfect. Cody does the moonsault. You end it right there. Done. For one, you don't need Cody beating up on Wardlow too much, because Wardlow's a big guy. You don't want to make him look too bad in this loss. So he gets hit by a big move and he got beat for 3 seconds. That's what it looked like to me. He still dictated the pace for the most part. Cody got his share of offense in, but it took a big move to beat Wardlow. There wasn't like a big move and then 12 things happened after that, and he eventually lost.
Right.
And on top of that, I feel like I'm like a lot of old school guys say this. That was the biggest thing in the match. The crowd was into it. You know, a lot of times you see a lot, and it happens all across the board in wrestling, not just in WWE. But something big will happen, and the fans are like, "Whoa!" And they go, 1, 2, kick out. And it's like, oh. And you bring them back down. Of course, the challenge from there is to bring them back up. But you had them right then and there, and they were, you know, jumping out of their seats. That's when you end it. And that's when they ended it last night. And I thought that was perfect.
Yes.
Sometimes matches got to end at that point. When you get this big, massive thing, how could you do anything after that? Sometimes you got to end it right there. Save the big stuff for the crescendo, the ending. Yeah. Instead of doing like two or three of those things, and now I'm desensitized, and sometimes those matches, when they do that, they backfire, and then your actual ending is very anticlimactic. So it's just like one, two, three, and it's like, oh, yeah, okay, it's over now. But like, when you had them, that moment, it's like, that's when you get out of there.
Yeah, they get tired of right. reacting the same way to like that thing.
But it's almost like you get a double pop, because like you get the pop on the move, and then you get the pop on the finish, and it's like, whoa! Like, there's like a euphoric feeling.
Yes.
You know, and that was, I thought that was perfectly done.
Yes.
That was the exact way that match should have ended, because I guarantee you have a dozen other matches all across wrestling, and they don't end there.
Even their tag matches are the same way.
They'll
have all these big moves, and then they'll kick out. It's like, come on, dude. Like, AEW got to be better. And then you had NXT TakeOver this past weekend with Adam Cole and Tommaso Ciampa. You had the same thing. Like, close fall after close fall. It's like, you don't need all that. That doesn't make a great match. What makes a great match is the psychology behind it. And the moves, and like the, you don't need these Canadian destroyers off the announce table. You don't need these quote unquote high impact moves that get a two, and or you super kick somebody and they just super kick you back and not even sell it. Like, that isn't wrestling to me, man. It's not wrestling to me. It's the way wrestling is now, though, which kind of like upsets me. I'm not trying to be like a curmudgeon or anything, but I don't like that. I don't like how that it's becoming the norm. So when I see something like you said with Cody, one big move, moveset off the top, that's it. We need more of that. We need, you know, all these near falls don't make it a great match. It's everything that leads up to like a one or two big move set that makes it a great match. And you just create the ending. And that's it. You go from there. And then maybe you do another spot. If there's a rematch down the road, introduce something new. I don't know. But like too many near falls, too many high impact moves, and too many no sells. And that really sours everything for me in wrestling right now, mostly NXT and mostly AEW. But thankfully, in that steel cage match, that wasn't the case.
And I know some people will say, oh, this is how the business has evolved. And this is what people like nowadays. And that's probably true. That doesn't mean that way doesn't work still. Like, what Cody and Wardlow did last night was a pretty old school way of ending things. I don't see anybody complaining about that. I don't see anybody asking, they could have did another corkscrew off the top of the cage. Like, you know, like, no, it's just like, yo, that was because when people are over and you got a good story, everything makes sense. It's still pretty good. Still pretty good, actually. I wanted to get your thoughts, though. I was curious of what your thoughts were.
Flyers win in Columbus in overtime, I saw that. By the way.
Okay. 4-3.
Sweet.
Anyway. I was curious as to your thoughts on AEW's cage. What do you think about their cage?
So, I thought, you know, to me, thought they could have used, if they were going to have the cage sit on the outside of the ring, they could have had a cameraman inside. Instead of, you know, right outside on the cage, like they didn't have, like, I don't know, that annoyed me. Little tiny thing. Didn't really have a problem with the cage. I didn't hate it. I didn't think it was like some amazing thing. It was different because it was on the outside of the ring, but it didn't really give you room. It wasn't like a Hell in a Cell or anything like that.
Yeah.
I didn't really think one way or the other. Did you have a strong opinion about it?
Not really, no. I mean, I'm sure somebody did. Yeah, I'm sure somebody out there had like...
It's not painted red or anything.
yeah, that's true. I forgot WWE did that. Like, it's just a red cage. But it didn't really like you said, it was different. It was a cage. Like, I understand, like, it was different because usually, like you said, it's on the apron. This was all the way to the floor. But without the room, like a Hell in a Cell provides. And it was like, it seemed like the outside had like extra, like, I don't know, structure. So it made it easier to climb, it looked like.
Yeah.
It was fine, I guess. I did like, my favorite part about everything, besides the finish, was the fact that the escape part was taken out of it.
Yeah. Like, and I don't, did that. They say that at the beginning? I remember
they said it, like when they opened the doors, like, well, that won't matter because you got to there's no escape. You got to pin to win. And I was like, thank you, AEW, because like.
But should they not have said that at the beginning? Like,
they might
not
have.
Why not give the fans, hey, this cage match is different because of this? And but now you wait till like that moment that Arn Anderson's there with, you know, MJF. And I get it, because I think it was around that time where, you know, the cage door was open and then they, Jim Ross was just kind of like, well, that doesn't mean anything. Can't escape it. And it's just like, right. Oh, okay. Like, we finally know. And unless they did say it and I missed it. Right. I don't know if you heard it.
I did not. I don't remember hearing it at least.
Yeah. So that's the first time I heard it. But yeah, like the whole escape thing, I was never a fan of. I get why it was used by WWE with, you know, stories and protecting, you know, people and all that stuff. But yeah, definitely steel cage should mean something in wrestling still.
Yeah, forget that escapes. Like I said, I don't know why they did it too. I think it was so Hulk Hogan didn't actually pin King Kong Bundy in WrestleMania 2. And if that's the reason why they did it, fine. For that match, fine. But I'm not a fan of it otherwise. It just makes your people look cowardly. Like, why are they trying to run away? So you know, your point is not to beat the hell out of this person, which is why you're in a cage to begin with. That's the reason why you're in a cage. It's to beat, because you don't like this person, and I want to dismember this person. I want to mutilate this person inside the steel cage. But the only way you can win is by running away and both of your feet having to touch the floor. Now, I get from WWE standpoint, in their minds, it's like, what is the drama of someone trying to escape and that whole interplay? But it's not, that drama is nowhere near as good as seeing two guys who don't like each other beat the living hell out of each other until somebody gets pinned or whatever, like submitted or whatever. Those matches are way more entertaining than seeing a guy dangle from the cage. Oh, is it going to fall? Is it going to fall? Oh, my God. And sometimes, well, you saw, like, we did the live commentary on patreon.com/shootersradio of St. Valentine's Day Massacre 1998 with Steve Austin, won the technicality. Now, sure, people didn't care because Steve Austin was so over and Vince McMahon was over as a heel. Everything was white hot, and they just forgave it because they got what they wanted. Now, it was an exciting match with Steve Austin coming out on top, and he was going to WrestleMania. But when you really think about it, he won by technicality. Big Show threw his ass into the cage, and the cage door opened, and he fell. He didn't. That's all. That's why he won. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's kind of whack when you really think about it.
That's the thing. That's the thing. Like, you make a good point, and I'm not a fan of it. But I'll give WWE credit here. They've used that rule for a lot of finishes. And pretty entertaining finishes too. Not every single one, but you know when the Undertaker came from under the ring and grabbed Diesel, so Bret Hart can go over the top to escape the cage. Really, I guess Diesel should have won because he probably hit the floor first.
No, but he went under the ring. He dragged him to hell.
Yeah,
there's no floor in hell. The floor in hell don't count.
That's true.
Got to be the arena floor. The hell floor. No, we don't. No. Can't count the hell floor.
Gotcha. That's in the rules. Yeah, there was one with Batista on SmackDown a while ago. Like the Money, I mentioned this on the podcast before. The Money Inc. Steiner Brothers steel cage match from SummerSlam Spectacular 93. You know, when Rick Steiner was on the floor and he prevented the IRS from touching the floor when DiBiase's punching him. He didn't just like clip his knee, I guess, or whatever. But so Scott Steiner went up the opposite side and came down, so Rick Steiner's feet were on the floor, and then Scott hits the floor, and they win. So they've come up with creative finishes using that rule. So I'll give them credit, and that's like entertaining to me. But you know, make it something else. I don't know, because steel cage to me screams like blood feud. That's why like Hell in a Cell should scream blood feud, but it really doesn't anymore. So, but yeah, like I'll give them credit though. They've come up with some creative finishes using that rule.
But there are so many more terrible finishes or not memorable finishes.
Right.
Unmemorable finishes than there are the cool ones that you can remember. And there's been so many cage matches over the years since they really have done that. And there's just so many. It's just like, oh, his feet touch the floor. Yay. Instead of like the creative ones. And I think Bret Hart, Owen Hart had the cage match at SummerSlam 94. That was an escape one, right?
It was, I believe. We did live commentary on that on our Patreon as well, so check that out.
Go check it out, patreon.com/shootersradio. We can get that and more content.
Yeah, Owen's foot
99
got caught. So they were both like trying to escape, and then Owen's leg got caught, and then Brett scaled down and won. And yeah, also the one on Raw is War before WrestleMania 13. Him and Bret Hart and Sid Vicious. Wow, Bret Hart and Sid, and I believe when Austin came out and the Undertaker came out trying to keep them from escaping the cage. Now that's what I'm mean when I'll give him credit because that was creative. You know, Austin wanted Bret to win because he wanted their match at WrestleMania to be for the title. Austin wanted to become champion. Undertaker wanted to prevent Bret from winning because he wanted to beat Sid for the title at WrestleMania. So like that was kind of cool. We didn't really see it much after Attitude Era had okay stuff when talking about finishes, but I don't know, man. Those are the types where I think they use that rule to their creative advantage, but I think for the most part, that rule got to go. So I'm glad AEW did it. It was never in WCW. It was never escape the cage unless they changed the rules or stipulations for something. I know when Vince Russo won the title, it's because Goldberg speared him through the cage. So I think that might have been one of the only times they used an escape the cage rule because it was Vince freaking Russo. That WCW never had that. So it was cool that I had something different to watch. You know, WCW tried to be as different as possible a lot of the time in like 95, 96, 97. So definitely.
One of my favorite matches is probably my favorite cage match. Magnum TA, Tully Blanchard, I Quit match inside of a steel cage where I think Magnum put a spike in Tully Blanchard's eye, made him say I quit. This doesn't get more blood feud than this right here. Like, if you want to watch a really good cage match, and obviously WWE doesn't have blood, and you're probably not going to have a spike driven in someone's eye, but just the heat that was in this match, you can potentially replicate this. This is what cage matches should look like. Not guys trying to run away from each other. So go find that match and report back to your findings to us, people out there listening. If you're out there within the sound of my voice, if you can hear this, report back. Because this is what a cage match is. That match, crazy. They belonged in the cage. They hated each other. You know.
Yeah.
And I thought that even though the Cody Wardlow thing wasn't like really like blood feud hatred between those two specifically, but there was some heat there. And it was, you know, they got blood and all this and that. I thought it was fantastic. So,
now that I think about it, I thought it was weird that they put in a steel cage to begin with, but maybe it was their way of protecting Wardlow with taking that moonsault and then beating him. So I guess how else are you going to beat him without Cody like hitting a foreign object or something? You want to make Wardlow strong and possibly a future opponent for a feud with Cody or somebody else and being the elite. So, that's kind of where I'm like, okay, you had Cody gushing blood. You had Arn Anderson involved. You use the cage to tell that story too. That was outside of the ring versus inside of the ring. Because really, Cody and Wardlow didn't have that big of a issue with each other. But I liked Wardlow actually taking one lash to Cody when they did the 10 lashes. So at least you kind of had that where it didn't really seem like Wardlow was involved or should have been involved because it would have been nice for it just to be MJF and Cody, but MJF's the chicken shit heel. I get it. So, you know, it was good though. It was everything that I've had questioned. Well, not everything. Most of the things I've questioned about their creative direction, AEW's kind of really come back and done a great job with it.
Yeah. I saw a little hint that Raven might be the Exalted One in AEW.
Is that like the Dark Order thing?
Yeah. Don't do that, AEW. I'm just telling you right now.
Well.
Don't do that.
I mean, he doesn't even look anymore.
No, let's not do that anymore. Have you watched let me ask you, have you watched the Ruthless Aggression documentary on WWE Network?
My goodness.
I have. Let me tell you, I have not watched it. I don't plan on watching it. And then I saw on Twitter that they were pretty much making up stuff.
So here's the thing, and I think I know exactly what you're talking about, how they renamed WWF to WWE.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. But, dude, it's interesting, and it's probably, like, you were a fan at that point, and when did you start watching, like, 97, 98, something around there?
I mean, I watched when I was younger, before that, but when I picked it back up on my own, yeah, it was, like, 98, late 98 into 99.
Probably fully immersed in 2002. I'm shocked.
Yeah, I was hooked, line, sinker, into. I was already, like, two or three WrestleManias in by 2002.
Like, why wouldn't you want to watch it?
Right.
I'm surprised. You weren't going to watch it?
No.
Man, I definitely...
I feel like they're going to tell me a lot of stories I already know. Okay. Well, here's the thing.
Too dire at this point.
Let me walk that back. I probably would have watched it if I didn't see people online saying that they were making up stuff. And they had a bunch of revisionist history. Which, if I saw, like, okay, it's really good, it's worth watching, I probably would check it out. But, I mean, I've kind of... Now, they are doing an FCW one, which I don't... To me, like, I feel like I know a lot about that era, like, the Ruthless Aggression era and the guys that came out of there. I feel like, because those guys have been around for so long, people forget this is now 20 years ago. So how much more do we need to know about Cena, Lesnar, Shelton Benjamin, Randy Orton? Like, I feel like we know a lot about those guys, even though I'm sure there's some stuff I don't know. But the FCW stuff... that they're going to do, I forget when they're going to do it, at some point this year. I think that's going to be really good. That's something that I'm more interested in because this is the precursor to NXT, but yet they got a lot of talent out of FCW. Seth Rollins is down there, Roman Reigns is down there, Moxley. Big E was down there, Kofi I think was down there he might have been in Deep South. Either way, Sheamus was there, like a lot of guys were there. I'm interested in that. But just, I don't know. Ruthless Aggression, I don't know. Have you watched it?
I have, and I've been a big fan of it.
What are your thoughts?
I didn't really watch a lot of OVW footage of guys like Batista or Cena through the years. So I was really hyped to see this footage. And the fact I knew John Cena was the prototype in OVW, but they highlighted him on this second episode, I believe, of the documentary. And it was mostly about Cena. And just like they show promos of him, and it was totally different than he was. But and they told the story about how, you know, once Cena was champion in WWE, how he when he would do signings and stuff, how he saw the children were coming out and really, you know, becoming his biggest fan base. And he had mentioned that he needs to stop rapping. Now I thought he's kind of stopped rapping before he won the title, so that's kind of something that I'm. Like, man, I don't really remember him being much of a rapper when he faced JBL at WrestleMania, but
he was rapping still a little bit. He was rapping,
and not as much as he was basic Thugonomics type character about a year prior. Maybe I'm wrong, but you know, through my memory, I just don't remember him rapping too much at that point. But yeah, once they got to the name change, and I forget if that was in the first episode or second episode, but. That was kind of the most ridiculous. You know, we've seen revisionist history a lot. They talk about it a lot with the NWO, with how Hall and Nash and, you know, stuff like that. We've just seen, like, the ratings and all that. And, you know, maybe Eric Bischoff plays a part in it, too, with the revisionist history. Who knows? Because I think he's more against how things went with Turner than he is WWE. So maybe he helps with that revisionist history a little bit. Who knows? But yeah, with the whole name change, they did not mention not once the WWE, like the World Wildlife Fund and the lawsuit that was going on. Here's what could happen. It's entirely plausible to me that Vince McMahon was thinking about changing the name leading up to it. Because after the Attitude Era, you needed something to sink your teeth into to adapt to the changing landscape of wrestling. The Attitude Era was not really happening at that point. it was getting old. A lot of things were getting old. So maybe there was a name change scenario going on. But Vince McMahon didn't just wake up one day and say, okay, we have to change the name because our product is changing. Like, that's not what happened.
That WWE is not what happened.
WWE was forced to change the name by the World Wildlife Fund, which then became the World Wildlife or the World Fund for Nature or something like that. Worldwide Fund for Nature. So their initials eventually changed, but you know, they were going through all this court process and everything like that. But the fact that they didn't mention it once on the documentary, and I think that's what caught everyone by surprise. The first tweet I saw was from David Bixenspan when he actually took the video and put it on Twitter about in the documentary. And they not once did they mention, you know, that was pretty much the reason. They just went, oh, they rebranded and now they're getting the F out. And they just showed all those promos of, you know, that they filmed about them getting the F out and all that. So, yeah, I thought that was ridiculous. If you're going to do these types of documentaries, and I'm a fan of that era, and I mean, you know, WWE produces really good content when they want to. Don't feed me the bullshit, man. Don't feed me that BS. Put the real reason why they changed the name in there. Like, why? I don't know if it's because they don't, maybe they think it makes them look bad. I don't know. Like, you didn't even have to say how the court proceedings were going. You didn't even have to talk about the legal thing. You'd just be like, there was a battle over the initials and the World Wildlife Fund won, so WWF had to change their name.
You don't have to delve into the whole details. Just say, hey, legal battle, we lost it, and then World Wildlife Fund won the battle. We changed our name. Like, you don't have to really touch on it that much. They didn't really have to touch on it at all. But they touched on it, and I mean, it makes sense to touch on it, but like you said, you don't have to delve deep into it. Just be honest. We all know.
Yeah. Like, and I remember it was when I first got a, this is funny, I got a cable modem. So my internet was like so fast. I was like, yes, I couldn't wait to get home from school so I could go read wrestling news on the internet. And that was like one of the first stories that happened when I got the cable modem. I came home one day and it was like, hey, WWF is WWE now. And I thought it was like the dumbest thing ever, but now it kind of worked out for him. But because WWE is like, you know, I think it actually sounds better, to be honest. I wouldn't have thought that 15 years ago, or what was it now? 18 years ago. But you know, they went kind of through like why they started the roster split and all that, or the brand split. They could have delved even further into that. I think the John Cena episode was really good. I'll give it that. The first episode I think was just kind of like a broad based episode, and I just don't think that was as good, but definitely the second one was good. I don't know if they uploaded a third one yet, but I think the next one was going to be like the actual draft, the first draft they had with Flair and McMahon. So we'll see how that goes. But I'm a fan of that era, so I'll be watching it regardless.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested. I was going to ask you, you kind of said this already, but besides that WWE, WWF thing, is it good besides that?
I might look at it differently than most. I think it is, but they're kind of short, you know, I don't think they're even an hour long or something like that. So, I mean, if you really wanted to give as much information on that era, you could probably, I mean, it's been like a few days since I watched it, so a lot of things I watch now I just forget the next day, but I enjoyed it, so yeah, I'm really interested to see like the next few episodes to see if I would continue with that opinion. But yeah, I mean, once I first saw the trailer, I was like, I'm all in, because I had a lot of questions about that era that I didn't really research yet. the WWF, WWE thing, I researched ad nauseum. So when they kind of glossed over that, it didn't even occur to me as I was watching it. I was like, okay, whatever. But then everyone else was making a big deal about it on Twitter. And I'm like, well, yeah, that is kind of weird that they didn't even mention the World Wildlife Fund and all that. But, you know, as long as they're not intentionally misleading people and, like, the whole revisionist history, like, it's just no reason for them to do that. There really isn't. It's 2020, man. No one's going to worry. Well, but people are going to call you out about lies if you, like, if you just forget things purposely, or like the thing, like not even mentioning the reason for the name change. You could, like, they could have just said this whole battle was a catalyst for Vince McMahon deciding to change the name because he didn't want to deal with it anymore. And then the legal things kept going. Like, you could have even phrased it that way and people would have been like, okay. But the fact that they didn't say it at all, and then you have people that will literally call out WWE for anything, jumping on that and spreading it around. And, you know, I don't blame them. I really don't. Like, to me, it wasn't like a huge deal, but yeah, you know, I definitely don't blame anyone for holding their feet to the fire.
The only thing I can think of is that maybe there's some legal ramifications, so maybe they can't really mention it too much. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's it. And they had to make up a reason why.
Yeah, there was, I think that I saw a couple comments that said, well, maybe legally they can't even say publicly why they changed their name, because maybe the World Fund for Nature doesn't want that quote unquote bad press. Like, maybe people start going at them, be like, why'd you make them change their name? That the people that don't know the story, who knows?
Right. So maybe that's, and that's the case, that's a valid reason to not to make something up on a documentary, to have to make up a new reason.
You can even put that in there and be like, due to legal issues, we can't comment on any change. I mean, why not just throw it in there? Because then you won't get the reaction of people that just think they completely omitted it on purpose because they wanted to, versus they had to because they weren't allowed to say anything. Who knows?
I guess. I mean, like I said, legally they can't say anything. They can't say anything, but it just felt weird to just leave it out.
No, that I want to piggyback off that. Have you listened to the New Day pod yet?
I have.
No, I was just listening to the latest one today, and that's pretty good. Like, I enjoy all the talk about leading up to Kofi Mania and all that, and everything that was going on. It's been one of my favorites. It's definitely a number two behind the Straight Shooters.
Oh yeah, we're number one with a bullet. But I have listened to the New Day pod, and yes, I agree. It's a great pod. I like the story they told about them partying with the Cavaliers after they won the championship.
The Warriors, yeah.
And what was that? 2016.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was pretty funny. But you know, that's a great podcast. I agree. Mm-hmm. So, but we're a great podcast too, even though we got to wrap it up here for episode 227, like a TV show back in the day, bringing it up again. But yeah. Gotta wrap it up.
I might add in the theme post production. I'll add in the theme.
Why not? I mean, why not? Just add it in there. Throw it in there. It's a classic theme. Throw in the Amen theme while you add it too.
Yes. It's a classic. I'll do it back to back.
Yeah, why not? Throw it in there. But in the meantime, Nick, take us out with some plugs, please.
You can follow me at Nick Pacone on Twitter. Follow us at Shooters Radio on Twitter. And hit up my site, PhillyInfluencer.com. You will see all the greatest and latest in Philly sport, latest and greatest. I kind of switched it up there in Philly sports. And yeah, that's it.
Well, I'm at Vaughn M. Johnson on Twitter. If you can't find me there, well, you know where you can find me, more than likely out here in these streets where I'm always am. But make sure you check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/shootersradio. You can find some exclusive content for the nominal fee of $1.99. Only $1.99. We just recorded and is posted on Patreon, actually, our live commentary of St. Valentine's Day Massacre in 1998. Like I said earlier, we did that. And it's on there. We did not the whole show. We only did the Stone Cold Steve Austin, Vince McMahon, Cage match from the main event of that show. So you want to listen to our thoughts on that and a live commentary, go to patreon.com/usersradio. Drop that $1.99 exact change, I guess, if you want, you know, $1.99 only. You can give us $2 if you want. We'll take the extra penny. We'll take it as a tip, I guess. But go on there and check it out. It's good stuff. We got other exclusive content on there as well. We got more coming down the pipe. So check us out, patreon.com/usersradio. But until next time, I'm Vaughn Johnson for Nick McCone. Thanks for listening to episode 227 of The Straight Shooters. We'll catch y'all again next week.
Peace.
Place, child.